Welcome to the Ad-Libbing Podcast.
My name's Natalie Ann Jameson and I'm an actor.
And my name's Ali Ward and I'm a youth theatre leader.
In this new podcast, we'll be talking to some of our friends who just so happen to be some of your favourite faces from the world of stage and screen. They'll be sharing untold stories about their journeys into the industry, and we hope it'll inspire those of you who want to do the same.
This is our very first episode and we're delighted you've joined us, so much so that we've got a hell of a guest for you. He's Himesh Patel, the actor best known for playing Tanwar Masood on EastEnders and Jack Malik in Yesterday the Movie. In this episode, Himesh talks about having his audition for EastEnders on the same day as his last GCSE exam, his journey to Hollywood,
and the time he played a pigeon at the Edinburgh Fringe. Enjoy! Hello, Himesh Patel, and welcome to the Ad-Libbing Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
We don't usually address each other so formally.
No, not in the slightest.
We don't call names unless anybody's in trouble, so...
Yeah, so this whole thing is going to have an air of trouble, though.
Yeah.
Peril.
You were just filming, or had just started filming, a show about a pandemic, which was then interrupted by a pandemic, is that right?
That's exactly what happened, yeah. I was in Chicago, wonderful city of Chicago, and filming the pilot for this new series for HBO called Station 11, which is based on a novel, which is about a flu from Asia that, you know, causes a pandemic. But it's far more extreme in the book, because everyone dies. It's like a 90-something percent death rate around the world and it all happens very quickly. We started filming that. And we were only filming the pilot and then we were taking a break anyway and then going back in the summer. But we're not sure what's happening now. We're just waiting to hear. But it is very strange that we were filming something about pandemic and it's now been halted by an actual pandemic.
It's so strange.
Imagine the chances.
I know, yeah.
So let's take it back. I forget how long we've known each other.
6 years, I reckon. About 6 years.
You were certainly still on EastEnders when we met you, but the last 4 years since you left Albert Square in 2016, right?
Yeah.
Has been a whirlwind. It's been, I feel very lucky to have enjoyed lots of that journey with you and celebrated your success. You've worked on some incredible projects in theatre and on screen. We obviously saw you playing the role of Jack Malik last year in Danny Boyle and Richard Curtis's Yesterday. But yeah, I just want to talk really about that decision to step away from E20, from Albert Square. Was there anything that sparked that decision particularly? Was it always something that you had in mind? What happened?
Yeah, it was something that I'd been considering for a while when I eventually did it. Because I always knew that I didn't want to stay there forever, despite it being really fun and despite the fact that I was working with a lot of really great actors and getting to do a lot of really fun stuff. I knew that there was going to come a time when I wanted to try something new. But I just kind of followed my nose, as it were, in terms of when that would be. And never taking for granted that the decision would necessarily be mine as well, because when you're in a show like that, there's a lot of moving parts. And at any point, they can say, hey, listen, we've run out of stories for you, actually. So we'll let you go. So I was actually very lucky that I managed to be in the position where I could make the decision to go. And it was just time. I'd worked with so many great actors and I'd spent about 2 or 3 years at that point working with Maddie Hill, who we all know. Obviously, you guys went to drama school with her. Maddie's the reason that we know each other, actually.
She is.
She
arranged, about 6 years ago, she arranged for us to go to a pub quiz together, didn't she?
That was it, yeah.
That was our play date.
That was your play date.
Play date. And we're still pub quizzing to this day.
You'll never won that quiz either.
No.
Yeah, no chance. I think the highest score, highest position has been like fourth or something.
Yeah. Although I think we, under our team name, came second without you 1 week.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. And why did we come second? Because they moved the day off the quiz and nobody knew about it.
Yeah. and there were a total of three teams, and then one team left, and so there were two teams playing the quiz that week. I tried not to take it personally.
So on aggregate, we really finished in the position that we usually finish.
Second last.
Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, I was working with Maddie for the last two or three years of being on EastEnders and really loved working with her and learned a lot from working with her. And I'd continually learned from a lot of the other actors I worked with, Nitin Ganatri, played my dad, being one as well. But Maddie had made the decision to leave. And at that point, our characters were in a relationship. And I just kind of thought, I really want him to have a happy ending. And so, because he, you know, Tamar was a very lovable nerd, and I didn't want him to fall foul of the usual dramatic deaths of soap, you know, or like heartbreak, all that sort of thing.
You're right, that totally suited Tamar as a character because he almost existed in a slightly different universe to the rest of the soap and the characters in Albert Square, didn't he? He was like the outsider sort of looking in and commenting.
Yeah.
It was quite a unique role, wasn't it? And one that I don't think we've really seen since in soap, you know, that sort of commentator on the melodrama. Mm. Sort of knowing raised eyebrows to the camera almost. Yeah, that totally wouldn't have suited Tamar as a character and who he was and what he represented on the show, would it? So,
yeah, so then I kind of went, well, let's leave together. So me and Maddie left at the same time and Tamar and Nancy got their happy ending and then I found out quite recently that they got married apparently off screen.
Yes.
So that's it got even better. You know, it was a decision that I didn't take lightly, but also it felt like the right time in so many ways to take the leap. But it was also really scary because I started when I was 16. So to then take that leap.
Was there any, I can't remember thinking back. Was there anybody else that had done it like around that time that had started having any successes? Because obviously there's a few of from you and your peers at EastEnders, a good few of your lovely friends who are doing some really cool projects now as well. And had that already started happening, or were you kind of one of the first ones?
I feel like it started happening. Ben Hardy is one who really just nailed it out the gate. I mean, he left at the beginning of 2015, and then like later that year, he'd been cast in X-Men. Which was just unheard of. It was like, you know, you don't leave EastEnders and then join X-Men. I mean, that doesn't really happen. But he did that, and he's still doing really well. He was in a little movie called Bohemian Rhapsody. So yeah, he's done a lot of great work. I seem to remember Rob Kaczynski was an actor who was on the show when I first joined, and then he went to LA, and he's done quite well. I think he's still doing pretty well. He was lovely as well. He was really nice to, you know, very kind to me when I just started on EastEnders. Yeah, and there's been more and more. Natalie Emmanuel from Hollyoaks.
Ah, yes.
We crossed paths a couple of times over the years, but she got Game of Thrones, and she's just done Four Weddings and a Funeral, the TV series.
Yeah.
Fast and Furious, I believe she's in those. You don't get much bigger than that. So she's really nailed it as well. So I think there's more and more, you know, actors from soap who have been doing really well on a wider stage after leaving, and that's a really positive thing, because I think there, for a long time, there's been a stigma attached, and I think in some pockets there probably still are people who look down on actors who, you know, don't do the usual route of drama school and all that. But I think perceptions are changing, and hopefully, you know, this generation of actors who doing all right for ourselves are going to help change that perception.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also think it's not kind of the same as it used to be, as in you don't really, it's not a case now of having soap actors and having Hollywood actors, and like, we're not all parts of different, like, we are all just actors and we can work in all of these genres, which is kind of how it's always supposed to have been. But actually I do think, yeah, I mean, it works against people as well, because sometimes on the adverts, you know, one of my friends will have gone up for an advert and then the advert will come on and they'll be using a massive Hollywood star instead. Like, they'll have changed their tact completely and they're like, the Hollywood stars are taking my adverts.
Yeah, they don't need it. They don't need to do that.
But yeah, I like that everybody kind of works across all different things now. I think that's a really good thing.
It is, and we all learn so much from those different forms of acting, I think.
Yeah.
Because everything's got a different discipline in a way.
You mentioned that going onto the soap at 16 and then leaving at, you were 25, weren't you? Just about to turn 26.
Yeah.
Wasn't a conventional route into the industry. You mentioned it wasn't like going to drama school and that route. That was when and I met. That was the route that we took in. But it's a great training ground, isn't it? Working on soap. Like for us and our experience at drama school, I think we had the sum total of about 4 hours worth of screen acting training. And generally we're told in those screen acting training sessions about the credits of the practitioner. That was usually a hefty introduction. I was once on an episode of, and sort of 20 minutes later, we'd have a coffee break.
It was outdated in that sense. I mean, drama school training, I don't know what it's like today. I talk about it like it was a million years ago. We only graduated 10 years ago, but that's mad to think that 10 years ago, I mean, 10 years ago, you were on EastEnders, right? And we were just trying to grasp some, like, obviously there was a lot of TV and film work out there, but the training's still obviously more based on theatre, which, I mean, it's fine. You can adapt how you need to adapt. But we had, yeah, the two to four weeks we had of film and TV training, I was like, wow, I can't believe that in this day and age, that's what we get.
And quite often we were told that, you know, the principles of acting on stage and the principles of acting on screen are exactly the same. So apply what you've been learning in your training thus far onto what you're doing on screen. And I was dreadful on screen. Everyone used to take the piss out of my scenes because I do too much with my eyebrows. I'd comment on everything. But I didn't know how to play it down and to make things subtle, internalize things and essentially the audience is in your face, isn't it, on screen?
The tiniest things can give so much away on screen. And that's something that I learned from working on screen for that long, but also from watching, you know, great films and a lot of, you know, great actors, watching how so many great actors will do so little and just trust that there's a feeling there and that the camera's picking it up. There's a lot of subtlety to it, which I find really amazing, actually, if you can find that. But then it's a two-sided thing. I can see why they're saying things like, you know, the principles are the same and you just apply. There are common principles in terms of the, you know, performing as an actor, and although we all have different methodologies that we might follow, you know, they are transferable, but there's a lot of stuff that's completely unique to both forms. You know, there are things that you really have to think about when you're on stage that you don't have to think about when you're in front of camera and that sort of thing, and vice versa. And I'm still learning so much from working in film and TV. And also film and TV is so changeable from one set to another, depending on who's running that set, what the form of it is. Is it a soap? Is it a single camera drama? Is it a big film? All these things have different facets that you have to pay attention to. And I'm still learning so much about the differences and how to apply them. I think the main thing for me is that you just never stop learning.
I think that's one of the best things about our industry. I say this pretty much every day at Emmerdale. I've learned a new thing today, like pretty much every time that I go to work. Then my friend Amy, who's been there for like 6 years, she's like, you'll never stop learning new things every day. And I was like, I know, I love it.
Yeah, it's really true. I think that did me well for those 9 years that I was on EastEnders. I was just always ready to learn.
You were always really inspired. Me and Ali were talking earlier and we said we can remember you. You talk so much about the crew at EastEnders. You were always really inspired by lots of the crew there as well. Do you remember that?
They were great. The crew, especially when you're working on a soap, because a lot of the people are there and they've been there for years, you know. It's really great work if you just want the regularity of it. And the longer you're there, the more you're going to know how to make it the best it can be. It's a very specific form of technical wizardry to do all that multicam drama. And they're just brilliant and they're just fun to be around. And I find that with a lot of crew, but when you're working on single camera, like TV or films, there's a lot of other stuff going on, a lot of money, you know, people are just kind of worked a lot harder because there's less time in the day. We've got to get a lot of stuff done. There's a lot of technicality. And that's not to say that doesn't ever happen on soap, but you can have days where things are a little easier for the people behind the scenes because the cameras are in fixed positions and, you know, there's only so much you can do. And so you can kind of enjoy your time between setups and that sort of thing. And you just kind of get to know each other so well.
There's probably people that were there when you started, when you were a child. Mm. Until you left, and I suppose it becomes a bit like a family in that sense.
It really does. And it kind of came home to me when I had my leaving due, and it was really emotional saying bye to these people, because who knows when you're going to see them again. And they, for me as well, they've known me since I was a kid, basically.
Yeah, what we're really interested in this podcast is kind of the journey from youth year to where you are now. So that bit for you, yours blurs more than most of ours does because you've got a bit of a crossover.
Well, yeah, I did a couple of youth theatres, basically. I started kind of realising I enjoyed it when I was about nine, enjoyed acting when I was about nine.
How did you realise? At what point, what were you doing?
Well, I was at a school at the time that they offered extracurricular drama lessons, and so they were like lessons where I seem to remember you could like you'd do the lesson and that meant you could leave another lesson and go and like spend an hour doing these kind of, I think they were called lambda exams, and so I was doing that, me and this other friend of mine, and we'd do these like duologues together, and then we'd have like exams at the end of term. So that was kind of where it began, because I had a lot of energy as a kid. And so my parents were like, well, you know, he does a lot of impressions. He does a lot of, you know, how can we encourage that? Which is to their credit that they didn't go, stop it. They went, okay, well.
Were the impressions good?
I don't know. I think they were okay. I wish there was footage of them. So I started going to these lessons. And then in year six, we did a school Christmas production of a play. And it was called This Is Your Life, Santa Claus. And This Is Your Life was this TV show that was on, I think it was still on at the time. And it was, this guy, Michael Aspel, and he'd like read someone's, it's like a Bible of their life, and they've got their mates are there, and they're kind of, you know, it's like a memorial, but the person's still alive. It's very odd.
Oh, it is. That's so weird.
Yeah, it's very odd. And so, you know, you'd be like celebrities who would just like be surprised and all their mates would be there. And so it was called This Is Your Life, Santa Claus. And it was like this parody of This Is Your Life. And it was Santa Claus and all the reindeer giving their testimonies and that sort of thing. And I was cast as Michael Aspel, as the man with the red book, as the presenter of the show. And apparently my teacher said to my mum, you know, actually he's really good and there's this local youth theatre if you want to get him involved. So the local theatre in Peterborough, which is where near where I grew up and that's where I was going to school, the local theatre is called the Key Theatre, and they had a youth theatre called, unsurprisingly, the Key Youth Theatre. And so I initially started going to weekday evening classes. And I remember we did a production of Bugsy Malone there, which is obviously like a staple of being a kid into acting. And I was just a part of the crowd, really. I didn't have many lines. But yeah, we did a production of that, and that was kind of the start of drama games and being part of a production, lighting, all that sort of stuff. It's my first memory of kind of doing that. At the same time, I was also doing the panto in my village where I grew up. So that was another kind of avenue into acting, was, you know, with all the people in the village who I knew and just doing loads of silly panto-y kind of stuff. And that was every Easter time, roughly, every year. So that was kind of when it all started waking up in a way, and just falling in love with it, really. And it being a kind of haven for me, which then carried on. I carried on with the Key Youth Theatre into my teens. I started doing it every Saturday afternoon. And it was kind of, you know, school, I didn't really, teenage years at school were a bit tough for me. I didn't really enjoy it much and didn't have that many friends. And so the Saturdays at Key Theatre were really special for me. And it's where I met my oldest friend, who's still my friend. I met him there, and it was a really important time and really, really special because it helped, I think.
It's so important, isn't it? Having that escapism from the Monday to Friday of school. If school's not your thing, if you don't fit in, if you're not academically gifted, if the school system doesn't necessarily suit you.
Which is why I'm so glad, by the way, that we didn't really go through it with this massive amount of social media around us. Because obviously when you left school, didn't you? And then, yeah, you could go to your youth theatre and, like, you could have all these different things. You could escape from things a bit easier, I think. Mm. Obviously at the moment, again, there's another level for everyone because we can't access any of these services currently. We made some of our friends for life there as well, and when we're not doing a pub quiz with you, it's quite often doing something with some of my friends from Live Youth Theatre on Zoom, and they're a massive part of my life to this day.
So you went to the Key Youth Theatre on weeknights and Saturdays. Did you attend any other youth theatres? Did you do stuff at school?
Yeah, so around 2006, my mum had seen some things in the papers about kids who'd done, you know, the odd line in Casualty or that sort of thing, and that they were part of this this youth theatre in Cambridge called, at the time they were called Whiz Kids. And so she looked them up and she was like, look, we can't afford to send you to both drama schools. And so she was like, "This, there might be a bit of scope here for you to get a bit of different experience. You might be able to go and do actual work if you want to do that." And I was like, okay, well, what's the harm in having a go? And so I auditioned because it was, you know, such a popular youth theatre that you had to audition. And I got into the Screen Academy. So they were such a big organisation, and they still are, and they've changed their name now to the Young Actors Company, that they had a theatre thing on a Saturday and a screen thing on a Sunday. And so I got into the screen lessons that happened on a Sunday. And so I started doing that, which was kind of heartbreaking to say bye to the Key Youth Theatre and, you know, my friends there. But it was just I think it was time to try something new. And in a way, also the fact that it was a completely different discipline, it was screen. And that interested me, you know, having grown up with films and TV to such a degree, maybe there was something to be had there. So I started doing that in 2006 and kind of fell in love with that and made some friends there. And we got to make little short films and that sort of thing. And then I did end up doing a bit of extra work. The company would often be asked to provide kids for extra work in London. So I got to do a few things. I did a bit of extra work on Brits, which was this really great TV show that came out in 2007. The lead was Riz Ahmed.
Wow.
I didn't ever see myself in it. I was deep background if I was ever in it. Mm-hmm. But it was one of my first experiences of being on a set. And I seem to remember it was quite, we were meant to be in some sort of martial arts class. And so I just spent the day getting kind of kicked to the floor for hours on end and being in severe pain at the end of the day. I don't know why I ended up being the guy getting kicked to the floor rather than the guy doing the kicking to the floor.
Yeah, did you offer yourself up for that?
Well, I don't know what happened. either way, I ended up being the guy getting kicked to the floor. And for what? I don't think I was even in shot. But it was a great experience.
That's the way to learn.
It was, and it was a way to like see how sets work. And then I did another couple of bits of extra work on a couple of things. And, you know, it was really interesting to see how that all worked. It was so new to me. And then, yeah, in 2007, just at the end of my GCSEs, I got a call. And there was this audition for EastEnders and that they'd managed to kind of get me in. And there was a question. It was literally the day before my last GCSE exam. I remember getting the call and then asking Mum and being like, hey, look for me. And I seem to remember when Steve, who was the agent at the Young Actors Company, who called me and told me about it. And obviously he was like, hey, this is really exciting. You'll have to get to Elstree and Boreham Wood tomorrow. And I was like, yeah, well, look, thanks, but I've got this science GCSE, so I've got to do it. I can't not do that. And I said to my mum, I was like, yeah, it's great, but I just don't think it's going to work. And she was like, no, what time did your exam finish? And whatever time it was. And the audition started like 2 or 3 hours after that. And mum was like, yeah, it'll be fine. Your dad will pick you up and then he'll drive you down to...
What a legend.
Which I was just... I know, I was so lucky to have parents who were that supportive of it. And so that's what happened, yeah. I finished my last GCSE and then Dad drove me down to Boreham Wood for my first audition. And then two auditions later, I ended up on EastEnders, which was a strange old summer.
I mean, that kind of all happened relatively quickly, didn't it? From you joining WizKids in the Screen Academy to getting some experience as extra... as a supporting artist on those programs that you've mentioned, and then getting the audition, finishing your GCSEs, and getting the role of Tamwar on EastEnders. There's a word that you keep coming back to, and it's learning. Everything seems in your young life, and certainly knowing you for over half a decade as we have, you're always keen to learn. You're always wanting to learn, you know, it doesn't stop, does it? I think that's something that I found really interesting listening to you and sort of reminiscing about being a young performer and taking your first steps into the industry and doing youth theatre and stuff, is that there was always a knowledge to be had by doing these things. And I don't think that's ever stopped for you, has it? That sort of sense of wonder and sense of, you know, just taking in and soaking up as much knowledge and experience as you can from those around you.
Yeah, and I hope it never does, really, because there's so much to learn. And I think it's because the industry is always evolving.
Yeah.
So the only way that you can evolve with it is to learn, is to keep, is to stay intrigued. Hello, you're listening to the Ad Libbing Podcast with Natalie Ann Jameson and Ali Ward. My name is Himesh Patel. Don't forget to like and subscribe and become part of the family by following Ad Libbing Pod on Instagram and Twitter. Cheers.
You did a little stint of some really cool theatre projects before moving into the films and stuff you did after that. So that would be an interesting thing to talk about. And then I just kind of want to know, like, what's been some of the most exciting experiences you've had in this time?
Yeah, so I left EastEnders, and again, fortunately, pretty soon after that, I got this audition for Damned, which was this comedy on Channel 4 that was written by Joe Brand and Moana Banks, and it was about social workers, children's social workers, and, you know, very dark comedy and a really great part. And I got to kind of jump into that, and comedy was something that I'd always wanted to do, and then to get to do it with people who are at the top of their game was really another great learning curve.
Me and Ali went to the to a screening of that just before it aired.
Oh yeah.
Your band got up and she said some lovely words about Himesh. She was really impressed with you. we were proud as punch sitting listening to her saying all of those nice things about you.
Yeah, she was great to work with.
The industry is in good hands with people like Himesh Patel.
And wasn't she right?
It's been in good hands because of people like Joe, and they're funny, but they do a lot of, they say a lot of really important stuff with their work as well. You know, she'd done it before with Getting On, which in a way, if you watch Getting On now, you realise how hard and how incredible our care workers are. They always have been, of course. And, you know, in making a show like Getting On, she made that clear years ago. And our social workers, of course, as well. We you know, told their stories best we could on Damned. So I loved doing that. And then I had a kind of free summer ahead. And one of my close friends is a musician and an actor called Tom Figgins. And him and his now wife, they had a theatre company that a bunch of them had kind of started when he was in sixth form. They're all musicians and actors, and so they would do these musical adaptations of novels, and they'd taken a couple to the Fringe before, the Edinburgh Fringe, and they were about to go again with an adaptation of The Hunchback of Notre Dame. And I told Tom that I'm quite keen to do some theatre. I feel like I need to kind of scare myself into doing some theatre and pushing myself out of my comfort zone. And he was like, well, look, we're off to the Fringe, and I mean, all the parts are in place, but we could probably offer you the part of a pigeon and a bell of Notre Dame Cathedral if you fancy it. And I bit his hand off, to be honest. It was like, definitely. Yeah, and so I just had the best summer and learned. And I did. I did exactly that. I scared myself into just enjoying it and being that vulnerable. Being on stage is a really vulnerable place to be, and something that I hadn't done for so long at that point.
It was like an actor-musician piece, wasn't it? With lots, like, told stories through some music, beautiful music, I guess, written by Tom.
Written by Tom and a bunch of the others in the company.
Were you out flyering?
Out flyering, yeah. I loved flyering. It was so fun because they were just people's reactions. It felt like, you know, being on a hidden camera show, you know, because you could just like try and be funny with people, and there'd be some people who just be like the most miserable people in the world. And it was just fun to kind of try and give them a flyer. And it was just the best. Like we were flying in, like, next to Dave Benson Phillips, who, for our younger listeners, we used to do a show in the 90s. What was it called? Get Your Own Back.
I tried to take my English teacher on Get Your Own Back.
Fantastic.
I remember applying for it and I asked her if she would go on, and she was good crack. Like, and she was like, yeah. This was when I was in little school, and she said she would go on. But when I applied and I never heard back, but that would have been really good. Miss Homer, she was called.
Get Your Own Back was one of the last bastions of slime. Children's TV shows featuring
Gunge.
I used to love any show with a big pool of gum. I remember they changed this quite quickly, but they had a stipulation where, so in Get Your Own Back, it was a series of games and activities that pitted a teacher against their pupil.
Yeah.
And at the end, if the student or pupil won, the teacher got gunged.
Yeah.
But for a short while, if the teacher won...
The student got gunged.
No, the student had to have their favourite teddy microwaved in front of them.
That's traumatic.
Yeah, and they had some really bad reactions, understandably. And they had to then revert back to just gunging the pupil.
Obviously, instead. If you were a good parent, you'd be like, look, they're going to ask you for your favourite toy, so do you want to get a pretend one?
Now, that's really good thinking.
Is that what you were planning when you were...
I definitely wouldn't have given them all Ted.
Not a chance.
Dog ripped the eye off all Ted anyway. So I went through the Teddy trauma.
Post-Fringe 2016, your next move was what? Where did you go after that?
Well, I had a kind of quiet end to 2016, which was nice. But I had auditioned at the end of the year for Don Juan in Soho, which was a show in the West End that Patrick Marber was mounting. The show he was going to, it was a play that he'd written and it had been staged years ago, but he was directing it this time in the West End with David Tennant, and I auditioned for a small part, and I got the role, and I was thrilled. I was like, you know, not only have I just done this little Fringe theatre bit, but now I'm going to get to go to the West End, which is, I mean, the most privileged like trajectory, but I was ready for the challenge, and so I started February 2017. We started rehearsals, and yeah, I got to work with, you know, Patrick Marber, who's obviously a legend of comedy as well as of theatre now, and David Tennant, Adrian Scarborough, not Adrian Lester. Sadly, I've met Adrian Lester. He's lovely. But he wasn't in this play. Adrian Scarborough, he was brilliant, and who's weirdly looks a lot like Ali.
Yeah, we always say, don't we, that you that he would play your dad.
He would play my dad.
Oh, what, do you not think it would be better if we thought of it like, so if they were casting his son, that you could play his son?
Yes,
yeah,
that's probably more likely.
That's probably easier. Yeah. we can sell you on that.
Could easily play Adrian Scarborough's son. Just put that in your spotlight.
So Don Juan was then followed up by going to Broadway, wasn't it?
Well, off Broadway actually, not Broadway, but New York anyway. I mean, either way, that was a dream come true. And it was this brilliant play called People, Places, and Things, which, funnily enough, I'd watched it. It was on in the West End just after I left EastEnders, and everyone had told me about this play, so I went to see it. It blew me away. I mean, it's an incredible piece of work. It's about an actress who goes into rehab, and so it's about recovery, but therefore it's not just about recovery, it's about trauma and how do we overcome trauma and vulnerability, and it also put into words a lot of things about being an actor that are very tough. That very thing that we were just talking about, you know, you do a production and then you know and you're so close to these people for x amount of time, and then, you know, you're like, oh yeah, we're going to stay friends, but life doesn't really allow for that necessarily. Of course, now we have WhatsApp chats and all sorts of ways that we can stay in touch, but you're never going to quite find that time with them again that you might have had when you're working so closely with each other, and especially when you're doing a play. And they were taking the play to New York, to Brooklyn, and they had to recast one of the roles, and so I ended up, I found myself in a play that I'd seen before, which was really surreal, but a real thrill. And again, they were obviously, almost all of them had been on the whole journey with that play, which was a huge journey. It was, you know, from the National to the West End. Denise Gough, the lead actress, won an Olivier for her performance. You know, it was a long journey they'd been on, and then they had this new guy come and join them, but they couldn't have been more welcoming. But it was directed by Jeremy Herrin, who was brilliant. And I mean, you'd worked with Jeremy before, had you, Nat?
Yeah, so actually it's really fitting for this podcast because Jeremy Herrin, I met at Youth Theatre. So, you know, we often talk about, I often say one of the things that really inspired me at Youth Theatre was the fact that we worked with industry professionals, and it's very different to school. We weren't, nobody was trying to teach me a lesson. I'm not very good at being taught lessons. but people were just like offering me their knowledge and, showing me like what they do, and I was just learning from industry professionals. And at this point, Jeremy Herrin was he was working at live theatre. So as part of the Youth Theatre, I did a writing weekend with Jeremy, and it was incredible. So he is one of the people that inspired me as a young person in my Youth Theatre, and yeah. He's done some incredible things since he left live theatre, including People, Places and Things. He's with Headlong, isn't he, Jeremy?
Yeah, and they're a great company. They do a lot of brilliant work. And Jeremy's his vision for the theatre is so thrilling. You know, some of the stuff they do on People, Places, you know, people coming out of the walls and people disappearing and all that kind of stuff that people... Even, of course, it was a brilliantly written play, Duncan Macmillan, who wrote it. But when you've got someone like Jeremy who can bring it to life in such a thrilling way without devaluing the words on the page in any way. And then it was when I was in New York towards the end of that run that I got the audition for Yesterday came through. And then that took me on that journey, which has been the craziest journey of my life, I think.
So we're sitting talking to Himesh right now, and behind him on the wall is the guitar.
Yeah.
Yesterday. But if we go back, Himesh had to hurry home from New York, and he had to come and grab your guitar and start preparing songs for this huge audition that he was going to be doing. And we were like, oh my goodness, it's so exciting. I remember it like yesterday.
I had to borrow a guitar from someone, and obviously, Ali, I knew that you had a guitar, so I stole your guitar, and I didn't steal it. I requested.
Paid back in dividends when you came back from the audition and told me that Danny Boyle had taken the guitar and played a couple of tracks on it.
I can't say he didn't play any. Danny doesn't play music, but he wanted to hold the guitar, so he held the guitar.
Same difference.
Either way, yeah.
In Ali's head, he played a Glastonbury concert on his
So yeah, I borrowed your guitar and went to that first audition. And actually, I think I borrowed your guitar again for the second audition, didn't I?
You did. And you kept on doing, obviously, little bits of like stuff that you were preparing and stuff at our house. We've done quite a few self-tapes with you over the years and things like this.
Oh, yeah.
And every time you left, me and Ali were like, I think he's going to get it.
It's very odd, isn't it? And yeah. I had the same when you were auditioning for Amy in Emmerdale. We did one take of your self-tape with our friend in our flat, and you nailed it. And it was just, the instincts were there. You could see the character. It just pops right out in front of you. I had the same thing when you were auditioning.
Jack Malik.
For Jack Malik for Yesterday. There's something incredible about that magic, that intuition that you, when you see an actor who just gets the character. How was the experience of filming Yesterday?
Incredible. I mean, such an amazing journey and it was the first time and still at the moment kind of the only time that I've been there from the very beginning, from pre-production, because weeks before we started filming, I had to be in, we created this room at the offices where I was preparing all the songs. So I was there from when they were making decisions about what characters would wear and who was going to play that character, et cetera, et cetera, all the way through to sharing it with the world last year. And so it was such an amazing journey and so fun, you know. Someone like Danny is such a fun person to work with, and we talk about learning from people. I mean, he's like the director laureate of the UK, really, isn't he? I mean, he's quite something. So it was an honour to work with him, and I really hope that I can work with him again at some point if he'll have me, because it was just brilliant. And so many great actors that I got to work with and places I got to go. And there won't be anything else like that ever again, I don't think. A Wembley concert, yeah. It was, funnily enough, it was Glastonbury, though, in the initial, in the first draft of it that I ever read. It was Glastonbury.
It was Ed Sheeran's gig, am I right?
Ed was playing four nights at Wembley anyway.
And then you played on the actual stage at Wembley.
And then we just took the stage from him through the night for two nights. So he came off stage and then we would film through the night. So, you know, I played to an empty Wembley Stadium, which is pretty unique. There's stuff like that where you just go, I mean, it's never going to happen again.
But there's plenty other things that might happen that you don't know about yet.
Yeah. That's the exciting thing about being an actor, isn't it? And I've had a very, very lucky journey, I think, in a lot of ways, the way things have lined up. And that's not to say I haven't worked hard for a lot of what I've got. It's just there is an element of fortune in terms of the way things line up. And I think about that with yesterday in terms of the fact that I was doing this play in New York, and had they come to me a month earlier with that audition, I wouldn't have been able to do it because I would have been in New York. So think about that a lot.
Obviously, there are elements of luck, of course, in your career and the things that you've been fortunate to do. But as a mate, I just want to say, like, your attitude, you're always the nicest person in the room. You're so generous with your attention and your affection to people. I think that goes a long way as well. And you are responsible for those things. We can't control the luck part of our careers and our jobs, but we can control what we're like as people, how we interact with people.
Well, thank you. That's very kind of you. And I agree about those principles. I think they're very important. I think being on EastEnders was really important in terms of what you talk about, the crew and that kind of thing. That's why I can never not be kind to the crew, because they've been working so hard. So, but that it helps every, it's kind of it's a symbiotic thing, isn't it? You don't do this job on your own by any stretch of the imagination, even though there's a lot of preparation that is very individual. And of course, embodying a character is a very personal thing. Ultimately, all creativity is collaborative. And I think we have to be reminded of that. Otherwise, there's so much danger of it becoming a very selfish pursuit. And of course, there's ego there. And I think it's always worth remembering that you're never doing it on your own.
Hello, it's Ali here. I hope you're enjoying the episode so far. I wanted to take a moment to let you know about my other podcast, The 7 Song Setlist. Here's my co-presenter and best friend, Daniel Kemp.
Hello.
Kemps, what's our podcast, 7 Song Setlist, all about?
So 7 Song Setlist is where we take our favourite artists and favourite bands. If they were playing a show and they could only play 7 songs, what would be that perfect setlist? And that's what we debate on this podcast.
We'll be compiling 7 song setlists together on loads of the bands and artists that would have been headlining this summer's music festivals. So if you're missing gigging and live music as much as we are, then look out for us on social media, 7 Song Setlist, and keep an eye out later this month, wherever you get your podcasts, for the 7 Song Setlist.
That was perfect.
Woohoo! We're about to see you back on the BBC as Emery Staines in The Luminaries. I'd just like to hear a little bit more about that. It looks very exciting. Period piece. Who's Emery?
Yes, Emery is he's a new arrival in New Zealand. He's come seemingly from Britain, although we don't know much about Emery at the beginning of the story. But yeah, The Luminaries is set in New Zealand in the 1860s during the gold rush, which I don't know how many people know much about there ever having been a gold rush in New Zealand, but there was, and it drew people from around the world. And the story begins with the central character, Anna Wetherill, played by Eve Hewson, And she meets my character, Emery Staines, as they're arriving in New Zealand, both having traveled from somewhere. And there's a connection between them, but then they can't find each other again. And destiny or something seems to draw them apart and send them off on these journeys that take them through a really difficult bunch of circumstances. It's hard to kind of explain it without giving anything away, but but it's a really brilliant story, and it's adapted from a novel which won the Man Booker Prize about 7 years ago. It's written by Eleanor Catton, who wrote the novel as well, so she adapted it herself, and she's done an amazing job of adapting her own novel and telling a story about love, about connection, about greed, and spirituality to some degree.
And you obviously got to go to New Zealand for that.
Yeah, I did, which, I mean, who knows what the world's going to be like when we come out the other end of this thing, but if there's a world in which you can go to New Zealand, I implore everyone to go, because it's just one of the most beautiful places in the world, and the people are wonderful. Their current prime minister is fantastic.
She's incredible.
And but all that aside, it's a brilliant country, and it has a beautiful history.
And whatever world we go back to, as you've alluded to already, what do you hope for in terms of your career? Are there any ambitions that are unfulfilled? Any directions that you see yourself going in?
I want to try and push myself to try and write something, a TV series or a film or maybe even a play. I feel less confident about saying that I would write a play, because I feel like playwriting is an art form that it doesn't come as instinctively to me. But just tell a story somehow that means something to me personally.
Oh, thank you for chatting with us, Himesh Patel.
My formal name, yes.
if you were to give one piece of advice for a young person, I get asked this question quite a lot, you know, and it is difficult to come up with one piece of advice, but young people get in touch and say, I want to be an actor, what can I do? What would your response be?
It's difficult really, isn't it? Because you don't know what everyone's scenario is. If there's a youth theatre that's accessible to you, you know, and that it's affordable to you, and I hope there is, then join that. And start being part of the community of performers, whatever way you want to perform, if you want to be an actor or a dancer or whatever. Just find the community and find that belonging. And that'll nurture, you know, whatever it is that you want to express. And that's the way to begin, I think.
That's the thing with youth theatres. It's not going to take anybody in one direction. Mm. You might get there and find that you love the technical side of it. You might get there and find that you've grown in confidence, and that takes you into the next step in your life, which is nothing to do with the performing arts. It's just a wonderful place. And yeah, your advice is very similar to what I would say as well. Yeah.
Thank you for ad-libbing with us, my friend.
Pleasure.
Keep researching for those pub quizzes, because we will win one day.
One day.
So that's it, our first episode. Did you enjoy it?
If you did, do as Himesh said and like and subscribe and tell all of your friends. You can also find us on social media at adlibbingpod.
Before we go, we're going to roll the credits and give a shout out to all of the crew behind the scenes that made this episode possible. So thanks to our editor.
Us.
That was us, wasn't it? Yeah. Thank you to our producer.
Us.
Us again.
Yeah.
Oh, there is someone I can thank.
Oh, yeah.
Oz Wills and Olivia Bromley for our amazing theme music. We think it's brilliant. It's been stuck in our head for days. I hope you like it too. Thanks, guys.